And welcome to the Palácio de São Bento, our parliament. It is a very old building with a long history, and we are at the Senate Hall. It's not using as a Senate because it just have one chamber, but is used for meetings like this one. And welcome to all of you. I hope you enjoy our dinner yesterday, and you have little time to rest. I know that some of you spend the night to see the Oscars or the results of Italy elections. It's something similar. And we don't know the official results until now. We need to wait a little bit more. We know that it's very important to the elections in Italy, like in Germany, like in France, like in Spain, to all Europe and to the European Union as well. Thank you very much for coming. And we don't have all the members invited to present because some of the members of this steering committee are not available to come to Lisbon. Members of the board of the Forum of Young Parliamentarians, they didn't come. And also Salma from the Bureau of Human, and Petra from the Bureau of Human Parliamentarians are not available to come. But we are here, and we will have one morning to discuss a lot of things. So, thank you. Welcome. We'll try to work. About the agenda, may we consider adopted? It was sent to everyone before our meeting. Thank you. We have also the minutes of our steering committee of last year in Oporto that should be approved. They were sent to all of you also, and we didn't receive until yesterday. I don't know if Ana Margarida saw the emails this morning, but until yesterday we don't have remarks about it. So we may consider it adopted as well. Thank you. We may go to the point 4, program of activities of our group during the assembly in Geneva. About this point, as usual, what we propose is very easy, is that our first meeting will be 21, I think. I'll try to find exactly the meeting will be held on Friday before the Women's Forum. As you remember, in our last meeting in St. Petersburg, we asked the people to answer and inquire if we should maintain our first meeting at the same time with the Forum of Women Parliamentarians or one day before. The big majority answered that it's better to have one day before the Forum of Women Parliamentarians, so the women parliamentarians don't need to choose to be present in their forum or in our meeting, and that's why we proposed this day to the first day of our meeting. It's not easy because we know that at same time may happen the executive committee, and that's why I talk with the secretary general and try to know If one day and a half of the executive committee will be enough, because they have 2 days for the executive committee, one day and a half it will be enough, or something. What do we think? What do you think about it? And our discussion, he said, usually, is it possible to have 1 day and a half, or a little bit after lunch? So if we need to delay, for instance, the beginning of our meeting from 3 to 4 o'clock, is possible to have the compatibilization between the executive committee and the 12 plus meeting. It will depend of the how it works at the executive committee, but at the end of the first day or in the middle of the morning of the second day of the executive committee, we will know, and we will tell everyone if we will begin at 3 or at 4 o'clock to allow us, the colleagues of the executive committee, to be present as well in our first meeting. Please, Robert.
I think it's very, very clear, and it's good to make the interpreters work a bit. So I think it's very clear, and I believe, and from the experience I have in the executive committee, that on the second day we can make it shorter. But this time there will be plenty of debate. I suppose we have a busy agenda, so I'm a bit concerned about that. The second comment, are we sure we will have the interpreters after 6 o'clock in case the session requires interpretation afterwards?
Okay, so we will try to have this question of interpretation, of course. We'll take care of it, because it's important, but I think we'll not have a problem. So, first meeting on the day before of women's, 3 or 4 o'clock, and on our second day, we will begin not at the first day of the assembly, just on the 26, 27, and 28 of March. Is it okay? Is it as usual? The first one will be at 23 and at 3 or 4, 26, 27, 28, at a beautiful hour, 8 a.m. Thank you. Financial matters. You have two pages with the accounts of 2017. And you may find that we received from our colleagues from Belgium a sold nearby 86,000 euros. And at the end of the year, we have sold nearby 92,000 euros. It was possible also, because our first committee here in Lisbon, all the costs were paid by the Portuguese Parliament. They need to thank to our Secretary General and to thank to our Speaker. They decide to cover all the costs, and that's why we have a better position at the end of the year than at the beginning of the year.
We will come back.
We will try. In this page, you have the expenses and a little explanation after it. We saw that Monaco didn't pay yet the contribution 2017. I think Monaco don't have problems, financial problems, but we will try to understand what happened with Monaco. Ana Margarida said that she contacted them a lot of times, but without answer, and we don't know. We will try in Geneva to talk directly with our colleagues and to understand what happened with Monaco. We have a little difference with Montenegro, but I think we may forget it because it's commissions for exchange rates and so on. For euros, it's not relevant, but Monaco is different.
Well, maybe they have gambled. They have gambled their contribution.
Yeah, maybe. We never know. May we approve the accounts as well? Thank you. Yes. Now, point six, Azerbaijan. It's something we should discuss a little bit and to make a proposal in our meeting in Geneva. Azerbaijan asked to be member of the 12 plus. Azerbaijan is the only member of the IPU that are not member of any region, any group. And they are invited to be a member of EuroAsia, but they prefer to be a member of the 12 plus, and they ask it, they ask to be a member. And they invite me as well to visit and to have contact with there with the authorities of Azerbaijan. I went there with Anna, and I may say that I will talk very clearly with all of you. What I saw is that they have a big effort to be very tolerant and Western, may I say, Western country. The freedoms of religion, for instance, are complete. We talk with all leaders of different religions, Muslims, Catholics, Jews, Orthodox Russian Church. All of them talk about the freedom of religion there. The culture programs as well, in libraries, in free internet, access to all information, completely free. But we know also that they have a special democracy. Is what is? I try to find a kind word to talk about it. And many times we need to think what is better is to have a country like Azerbaijan inside our group and try to share our values and try to involve in our values and we will try to improve democracy, the state of law and so on inside, or is better to keep a country like Azerbaijan outside of our group, and we don't know if they will decide to go to EuroAsia. It's our decision. Of course, they will come to our meeting to present themselves, but of course the floor is yours, and it's important to talk a little bit about it because it's different if we go to our meeting without think and without discussion ourselves, or if we have a little thinking about it. Christer, please, you ask the floor.
Thank you. A couple of years ago, we had the same question and the same issue as we had a discussion then. And of course, it's free. It's up to them to ask, but it's also up to us to decide. Last time, we went to the European Council and asked them about the report of the situation in the country. And the main reason is that we can decide on our own what kind of standard that we want our member countries to be in. We can't do the same when we are discussing the organization of IPU, because there is a lot of other countries and regional groups who have the influence of the membership. So I think that we should do the same. And if there hasn't been any progress when it comes to what we called democracy in Azerbaijan, then we should deny it again. But I'm open for having more information about the situation in the country before I say yes or no. Because coming to them, follow and have the possibility to follow their program, it's one thing, but to do it in a way that we can have a discussion with the opposition and others, MR organization and so on, that's a whole other thing. So let us try to have more information, and I am not prepared to say yes today or no. I want to know more about the country and the situation today. Thank you.
I may say that, of course, we will ask information, more information maybe to the Council of Europe, and if you have, we will share to all of you. And we ask the 12, IPU, I ask the Secretary General if our organization have a report about the situation of a country like Azerbaijan, if it's possible to send us. What he sends is not about about the situation in Azerbaijan. Is more, may I say, a Google information or a Wikipedia about Azerbaijan than about the situation, political situation in Azerbaijan, because it's about the population, about the religion, about the presidential system, and so on. It's okay, thank you very much for that, but it's not about it. But we need to think. I will share you something. We have members in our group, for instance, we are just worried about people that wish to come or about countries that are inside our group. What we have in Turkey right now is better than, is worse or better than what happened in Azerbaijan. And so, we will keep it, or we will ask everyone if you maintain Turkey as a member of the 12 plus. Why not to answer? What we did in the European Union, for 10, 15, 20 years ago, try to say to Turkey they will become member of the European Union, and we never, but the negotiations are going on and on, and what we have now is a worse position of Turkish than maybe if they were member of the European Union 5 years ago or 10 years ago. Because if they came to the European Union, it's more difficult to have a radicalization of, for instance, in many matters, death penalty, for instance, and other matters. But we didn't never say yes or no, and now we have a worse situation in Turkey than 10 years ago. So we need to think about it also. But we have John from United Kingdom, Robert. Okay, we'll try. Kerstin, Christer again. But John, it's your turn, please.
Mr. President, I have to say that I do have concerns about this proposal. Azerbaijan's record, according to most international independent observers, is very poor in the area of human rights, in corruption, and particularly the freedom of the media, which is regarded as being extremely limited. Obviously, some of those criticisms may apply to others, but Turkey, which you mentioned, is a member of this group already, and it shouldn't affect our decision as to whether or not Azerbaijan should be admitted. But I have a particular objection, and it's a personal one. I, as an elected Member of Parliament, travelled to talk to other elected representatives in Nagorno-Karabakh. I met the President and elected members. As a result of that, I have been placed on the banned list and am unable to visit Azerbaijan, simply because I entered into dialogue with elected representatives, which is something which I would have thought this organisation was set up actually to encourage. And it seems to me that we cannot admit a country that is prepared to ban elected members of parliament from visiting it simply for entering into a dialogue with other elected members.
Thank you very much. Robert, please.
Yes, this is a delicate issue, Mr. President, and as Christer said, we have discussed this before. There have been two requests by Azerbaijan to be part of this group. The first one was quickly discarded based on an opinion by the Council of Europe that issued a very poor report about the situation in Azerbaijan, so that did not go far. The second demand, the second request was a few years ago at the time I was chairing this group, and we had reports, somewhat positive, somewhat negative. There were improvements, but there were situations that were unacceptable. So I asked at the time Azerbaijan to be heard by this group, which was this audition was held. The first one was difficult. They could not speak English or French. They just speak their language. And I told them, well, we cannot understand you. Bring an interpreter. So they brought an interpreter. But he had trouble expressing himself in English. And so it was very difficult to understand them. The second time, the same thing happened with another interpreter that could not express himself clearly. And so I just wanted him to explain what they wanted to say. But this was a way of trying to avoid the questions. They were able to deviate the answers from reality. It seemed that the interpreter had been paid to make propaganda to the regime of Azerbaijan. Well, this was in the past. Now, at the time, I don't think they were even subject to the vote. They said there is no worse voting. Do you agree that we shall we continue? And unanimously, we decided not to continue. Now, this is the third time. Things have changed, yes. We know that they have evolved according to the international reports. But, Mr. President, I think things have to be made clear. It would be good if everyone agrees to invite representatives of Azerbaijan to come and explain themselves to us clearly and to put on the table everything we think is not good. The example given by our British friend is very clear. We cannot accept that Azerbaijan does not overturn decisions that we deem unacceptable. A member of the board cannot be welcomed to Azerbaijan because he's going to meet other MPs, local MPs. We want to have contacts with all the opposition, from the right, far left, well, it doesn't matter. We have to have this possibility, even if we don't agree with their points of view. Now, the case of Turkey is a good example put forth by the president. Yes, we can raise the question. We have had decisions, made decisions concerning governments where something happened. I'm thinking about Thailand. I'm thinking about some African countries where we hesitated to exclude or to suspend from IUPU the membership of certain parliaments because they did not observe what we call our values that should be respected. And this has happened to with several countries. Shall we do it about Turkey? And the president is right to say it or to raise the question. We can be tempted to do it, saying that, no, they don't respect our values. But that means what? To exclude from the 12-plus group means that the group is taking a stance on Turkey because of what is happening right now there, but we will be accused of not taking a stance on certain countries in the world where similar situations happen. Let's think about Venezuela, that where parliaments are still members of IPU. There has been the problem of Egypt, of Thailand. There is a long list of countries where these issues may arise and difficult decisions have to be made. So the only thing that I agree with is that the president is also right about that we should discuss the question of Turkey, so try to see how to improve the situation instead of suspending them from the group. This would have consequences on the rest of the IPU. That's a situation of fact. Back to Azerbaijan. It is up to us to decide, and I think that we should interview the representatives of Azerbaijan, explaining to them what are our conditions to accept their application. And namely, and there I think there is an easy situation, if we want to be members of the group, they can influence their government, the decision to be made, to rectify what has been done. This would be a good example, a gesture of a goodwill of the Azerbaijan to become a member. Right now, they are not members of our group. They cannot go to the Eurasian group because with Armenia, they have a conflict. So if they meet Armenia there, the group will not work. So there are problems there as well. So this is my point of view. I don't know if it is shared by the rest of the group. We have to make sure our values are observed, but we cannot go too far. Let me explain myself. We have in our in the IPU parliamentarians that are not elected; they are appointed. Think about Saudi Arabia, for instance. Think about other places where we have parliamentarians that are not really that do not follow exactly our Western values. And these issues like these can be raised. So we have to strike a balance here. Is the parliament functioning in Azerbaijan? Is it controlling the government? Well, more or less. But we have to try to strike a balance here. We have questions to ask to the representative of Azerbaijan. We should have the occasion to do that, asking them to come with an interpreter or someone who speaks correctly English or French. I would agree with that as well. We need to have a dialogue, a conversation with these people. And then we will see. Then the group will decide. That's what I wanted to say. I wanted to express my viewpoint on this issue. Thank you. Thank you. Margaret? Thank you, Mr. Chairman, dear colleagues. Well, being a newcomer in this meeting, I of course look at the regulation of the 12-plus and the request for membership is clear. We have to make the recommendations by the steering committee to the 12-plus. I have some concerns regarding the words of our British colleague. And I would like to ask you the following. That exclusion or that denial as it happened all the time, when was the last time you were prevented from entering a country in the region? Because you probably remember that Switzerland chaired the Parliamentary Assembly of OSCE in 2014. There was a Parliamentary Assembly in the summer of 2014 in Baku. I was there. And in Baku, as far as I remember, and at least at the time of this Swiss presidency, we were able to meet all parliamentarians that were somewhat sanctioned. They were allowed to come back or to participate in this conference. But maybe you have some different information. Then the Council of Europe and yesterday morning, even here in Lisbon already, I read a lot about what happened in the context of the Council of Europe. And I can say that as far as the European, the OSCE Parliamentary Assembly, Azerbaijan, in my opinion, and I've been following since March. I'm since March 2013 at the OSCE Parliamentary Assembly. I chaired next year the Swiss delegation, and as far as I know, as far as I have realized, the delegation of Azerbaijan is working normally, in quotes at least, normally. I did not realize any facts like those that have been described by the Council of Europe. So, in conclusion, I'm very open to listen to them. We have to hear them, to listen to them. I agree with the recommendation given by the colleague Kister and the Robert's proposal. To invite them, to ask them questions. There are reports by the OSCE. I will participate myself on the elections. I will be an observer myself in the April 11 elections. That will happen afterwards. But you can read on the OSCE website all the previous reports on these observations. Of course, they have plenty of criticisms, but we have to be critical, of course, regarding all countries, including my own, as far as financial transparency, for instance, is concerned. So I am open. I am open to that we have this dialogue and that we make a decision after listening to them. Thank you.
I think that it is a very delicate and complicated situation, and I don't think we can say a yes or a no like that. I think that we have to understand very well if this country is going in the right direction. And I don't think it is enough just to listen to them, and I would like that some of us who are experts of the country list the critical point with reference to human rights, democracy, and see if the trend towards what we consider our value are taken seriously into consideration by the country. And we have to be at the same time strict and open to appreciate the positive trends. And I find that speaking of Turkey is a good example, because just personally, I have followed, I've been following what is happening in Turkey since mid-80s. And so I think I know that country pretty well. But if some years ago I was allowed to visit people in jails, now I'm trying to visit our colleagues, and I'm not allowed. This means that I think that we have been wrong in saying Turkey, so to say, definitely out of EU or out of the process, so to say, because this has isolated Turkey around values which we cannot accept. And it is a very difficult equilibrium to keep the doors open, but not too open. And so if we can really start a process, not just a hearing, it's not enough a hearing, but in order to keep them on proof. So we open a bit the door, and one hearing is not enough, but let them feel that we appreciate if they are going the right direction. Because, for example, I felt very uneasy in St. Petersburg when Cambodia was, the Cambodian case was considered, and it happened exactly what he feared. They kicked out members of parliament, and they took the votes of those members of parliament to put into parliament members of parliament who belong to complacent parties. So let's open with cautiousness. And the process of the control of the process that they are doing must be very demanding, but at the same time encouraging, because the more they come near to our values, the better is for the population who lives in Azerbaijan.
Since we have decisions in this geopolitical group of the standards that the members are supposed to follow, I think they should follow that. If we have member countries, and I'm not afraid to have that kind of discussion, as Turkey, who has been in a worse situation today than when they were allowed to be members, I can discuss if they are supposed to be members, if they don't follow the rules. But I don't like us to take Turkey as an example, a bad example, and make them a standard for our organization. I think that's the wrong way of going. We can't take the worst example and say, since they are here, we can lower the standards. That's not my opinion. We have higher standards in this group than the IPU organization in its whole. I think we should stand behind those standards. And if members are not following them, then we will have a discussion with them, and I think also we can have a decision about if they are supposed to be there. But now we are talking about a country that is not a member, and at least we should have the opportunity to say no to a country who is not following our standards when they are not members. And then we can take the discussion about the members. Thank you.
Yes, dear colleagues, Chair, we have to ask ourselves what has changed between 2012 and now. Is Azerbaijan in a position to present a better case now? Can they show that the arguments against their membership of 5 years ago no longer hold? I'm not sure. There is now even an inquiry going on in the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe about undue influencing of Assembly members by Azerbaijan. Its conclusions are expected by the end of April, in other words, after the Assembly in Geneva. This is an element that is not going to help them if the issue of their admission comes up again in the 12-plus group. As in conclusion, my position is, if they want to apply again, they are fully entitled to do so. Let's hear them in Geneva, and then members can decide. If they are willing to take the risk of a second refusal, that is their call. Thank you.
Perhaps in answer to Margaret, I could just clarify. I know of five sitting current members of the British Parliament who are on the list, of which I am one. When I was a member of the British government, my Foreign Office asked the Azerbaijan government whether or not they thought it wise to maintain a member of the British cabinet on their banned list, and they said that they were unwilling to remove my name. Now, the list that I've got names 435 individuals, of which there are, I think, 14 or more French members of Parliament who are on the list. There are three Swiss members of Parliament, either current or past members, who are on the list. So this is quite an extensive list. It covers elected members from member countries in almost, I think, every member country of our group. And it does seem to me that that flies in the face of what this organisation was set up to promote, which is dialogue. And the Azeris ought to remove elected members from that list before we should contemplate admitting them.
I'm trying to think what may I conclude from your contributions, and it's not easy. Because what we have in our statutes is very clear. The steering committee shall make an examination of the application and present recommendation to the group. This is what we should do, to study and to do a recommendation to the plenary of our group. And I don't know exactly what are the recommendations that I may have now after the contributions of our colleagues. First, we may invite Azerbaijan to come to our group and to make a presentation. Great. And then we will ask everything we wish. Of course, everyone is free to put the questions to our colleagues from Azerbaijan. It's clear. It's easy. But, for instance, we will decide in Geneva, or is better wait for the results of the conclusions of the study of the Council of Europe that will happen in April, and to take the decision just in October, for instance, is another thing we may decide. We may try to have questions that can be made to our colleagues of Azerbaijan, if it's possible, written questions, for instance, and wait for the answers. And so we will prepare ourselves a report about the situation of Azerbaijan, and not just we'll not just decide with the reports of other organizations, but with a report of our organization. We may to have reporters of the 12 plus that can join all the answers of our colleagues, and we have our own report about the application of Azerbaijan, for instance. I prefer something like this, because why IPU and why the 12 plus will take a decision supporting on reports of other organizations, and we will not study ourselves the problem. We may to have three colleagues of the steering committee or out of the steering committee to prepare a report, for instance, and to present a report in October, and we will decide in October. I think is the way we'll try to, and all the questions should be on the table. Of course, what our British colleague asked, put on the table, is very important, is essential for us. Christer, please.
Yes, I don't mind, but do we have the resources? to make this study. Who is supposed to do it? We don't have our own organization for that. Is there, for instance, the Portuguese Parliament who are supposed to put up with this, or who shall do it? That's the reason why I was talking about the Council of Europe, because they have resources for this kind of issues. We don't usually have that.
Yes, we will see. But I may say, our colleagues make draft resolutions about everything in our committees. And we will not have skillings enough to make a report about it. We make reports, draft resolutions about peace and security, about environment, about health issues, about AIDS, about terrorism, and we are politicians. And if we go to Geneva, we'll have a lot of texts written by our colleagues about many times we know we have two co-reporters, but essentially made by someone from the 12 plus. Usually we have co-reporters, one from the 12 plus, the other one from Africa or from Asia, and we know how it works. And we have the text on the table. We have emergency items about Rohingya, about Syria, about everything, and we have the text about it. Just about Azerbaijan, we are not available to have a text about it and to know what improvements we have and what problems still there about democracy, human rights, and so on. If you decide to have the reports of other organizations, we may do it. We are free to decide. Robert, please.
Well, I think that's a good idea to explore. We can draft a report. Christer maybe is also right. We do not have all the elements, but if we draft our own report, namely addressed to the 12 plus, because this is not a demand of accession to the IPU. They are already in IPU, so they are the 12 plus, but because it is the group that's at stake here, I think it is normal that the 12 plus should draft its own report. But in order to prepare it, we have to take into account also the other sources of information, also the other reports, the Council of Europe, OSCE, and reports by other entities that are following closely what is happening in Azerbaijan. And I think that in the public opinion, there is also a wrong vision about Azerbaijan. Well, not necessarily wrong, it's right, but wrong for certain reasons. Sometimes it is mistaken that we mistake the decisions made by the president, by the government, and the parliament. I'm not saying that the parliament is the best they have, far from that, but the government and the parliamentarian. But what we want are the parliamentarians that much to blame as the government? I think that it is mainly the government that it is criticized and challenged. We don't see so much criticisms about the parliamentarians. I don't say that they are known, but that is something we should make a difference in our report. Because there are good parliamentarians in the parliament, I'm sure, as in all parliaments. So the report should take that into account as well, and take into account also all other information available, including reports that we can get from the foreign offices in our member countries that may have certainly interesting information for us to take into account. I think that the foreign office in Britain or the Ministry des Etrangers in France, they certainly have information that is interesting concerning Azerbaijan. And it's up to us to take that into account when preparing our report. I think this is feasible, and then we can discuss and make a decision. That does not mean we should not listen to them. I still think that we should Listen to the parliamentarians. The parliamentarians of Azerbaijan, to ask them the questions, and so that they understand our doubts and they understand what we want from them.
S'il vous plaît.
Please.
Listen to them in Geneva, not take a decision in Geneva. Take time in order to prepare our report, considering also other sources, including the Foreign Affairs Department of our countries. Because, I mean, it's true that, I imagine it's true that we're not so, not three of you. I will not be a candidate anymore, so I will not be here. But the more sources we use, the more complete the information is, so we'll be more likely able to give good recommendation. To give an answer in March in Geneva is too early to be ready to have a... So, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, is Azerbaijan the only country in the IPU that does not have a home? It's the only country.
It's our information.
So entertaining this application won't necessarily mean receiving additional applications to join the 12 plus, to our knowledge. So we won't have countries jumping then from one geopolitical group to another, for example. No. Okay. So if this is presented by the Azerbaijan delegation in Geneva, to whom is their case being made? To this group or to the entire 12-plus plenary? Okay, well, my prediction is if they come to the entire 12-plus plenary, many people will be asking many fundamental questions that should be addressed at the beginning. For example, this is the only country that does not have a home. Should be made very plain and clear, because most delegates won't necessarily know that. Two, they will not know whether an application like this has been made by another state, say, in the last 25 years. Has any other state applied to join the 12-plus in the last 25 years, and how was that dealt with? Three, Ukraine, for example. Three, there will be many lawyers in the room who will ask about the arbitrariness of the process through which a state is allowed or not allowed to join the 12-plus group. I know I would ask that question. On what grounds? Is this a star chamber? Is this evidence-based? Are we going to rely now on what evidence to decide? And, of course, it leads to what Robert and Pia mentioned earlier, which is... Okay, so if we're going to put Azerbaijan through this new filter, are we going to put the existing membership of the 12-plus through the same filter and ask Turkish and other representatives to come to the table and appear before us and justify what they are or are not doing? I think we have no choice but to go very slow. I think Azerbaijan deserves an answer, because it's been dragging on now for many years. But I like this idea of going back to our respective parliaments and saying, give us a position paper on what you think. Where is the Azerbaijani government, the structure, the parliament? What are the pitfalls? And then we can collate all this information and make a crisp and final decision. But I don't think we should drag this on too much longer. They deserve... I guess the last question I wanted to raise is this the logical home for Azerbaijan? Is it the 12-plus group, or is it another geopolitical group? If we were to say, let's look at the world map, is this where Azerbaijan belongs, or does Azerbaijan belong in another group, but can't join it? It cannot join it because of its conflict with Armenia. Is this an attempt to get around this conflict? That's just an outstanding question for which I have no answer, but these will be some of the questions I think would be asked in the plenary in Geneva. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We know that our group is very special with Australia, Israel, Canada,
New Zealand and European countries. So we are not as geographical like Africa or like Grulak, because we have countries from several continents. But what we share, the values. That's why we think and we have this discussion about the values, about the values, about democracy and so on. And we know that they have a special links right now with Turkish. And at the border with Istanbul, with Turkish, is very strong, all the links, economic and politics. Azerbaijan are linked with Ankara government, and they decide everything together. And I think that one of the reasons is that because Turkey is inside this group, they wish to be member of this group as well. But if I understood, and if I try to conclude, is that what we may answer right now and what is a recommendation of the steering committee is very easy. First of all, invite our colleagues to come to our plenary to make a presentation in March in Geneva. They came, they are available, if they are invited to come to make a presentation and answer the questions. After it, we will nominate a group, for instance, with three members of the 12 plus, that will prepare a report about the situation in Azerbaijan, studying all the sources of information, sources that may be from other organizations, from foreign affairs of each country. European Union, for instance, they have a report about the situation of Azerbaijan as well. And this report should be present in our steering committee in Funchal, Madeira, next September. And after it, the steering committee will have a decision to present to our plenary in October. Is it okay? Robert, please.
Je crois que pour être dans les normes...
I think that to comply with our regulation, the steering committee of the 12 plus should make a recommendation to the plenary of the 12 plus that will meet in Geneva. So we make a recommendation. We're not saying whether we're in favor or against. We are just making a recommendation, and this recommendation will be subject to the vote.
Thank you very much. Now, any other business about the 12 plus? No matter? No. So our next meeting of the steering committee will be in September. I'm trying to see. 17. On 17 September, 17, yeah. At Madeira, city of Funchal. Is it okay for all of you? Okay, we will prepare a special program for Madeira. Thank you. We will go to IPU matters, point 9. Preparation of the steering committee. First of all, questions relating to IPU membership and situation of certain parliaments. We don't have any documents about it, and we ask our colleagues from the Executive Committee if they have special information that wish to share with us. Point 9.91. Because document, you didn't receive anything from IPU.
No, no, no,
Okay, you don't have also. So, please, Robert.
Bon, alors nous, on n'a pas encore reçu.
Now, we have not received yet, just an email saying that they are going to send it. They are about to finish that work. So, we are waiting, and we will certainly receive something. But I just like to inform you about a couple of things. Well, we will discuss the finances later, right? No, I think we can talk about it now. It is the financial situation of IPU as chairman of the finance subcommittee. And the members of this subcommittee, I have just received the first report from the federal auditors, because there are two or three types of auditors. There are also some for the foundation. Now, the Swiss federal auditors, every year they make a report on the previous year's budget. These people are very Swiss, but it's a compliment, Margaret. Or for French, it's a compliment. They are very Swiss. So they are very precise, very they stick to the point, and they are very strict. So according to the previous report, the financial situation is deemed correct and follows the IPSAS rules. These are the international rules for administration. The financial report takes into account Articles 13 in the statute. It's in order. So the IPU finance and are quite healthy. There have been new sources of revenues, thanks to the new members. And an interesting thing is that they explain in detail that the functioning of the organization follows international standards that the IPU is observing, and the expenses of IPU have decreased, slightly decreased, not so slightly, 4%, because we are saving a bit everywhere, but there were also some extra expenses that had to be financed according to our program of work. Now, as regards the use of the funds, it's about the same. There are no debits regarding 340,000 Swiss francs of expenses, 304 Swiss francs in income, in revenues, so there is no current deficit at the IPU. Well, they spoke to everyone in IPU, the financial director, his deputy, and so forth. They have checked all accounts. As I said, this is very precise, very exhaustive. There is an interesting paragraph in their report. The Secretary General has borne the responsibility for the finances of IPU, is responsible for preparing, presenting of the statement of accounts that is precise and observing the IPSAS rules. IPSAS 25, they will change in 2019, it will become IPSAS 40, which is even more strict, more or less like the Swedish standards. Now, there should be no anomalies, no significant errors, well, small errors that can be accepted, but not major errors. And the responsibility of these auditors is too precise. To say if the finances are in good health, if they are functioning well, and to say who's responsible for what. And what the Secretary General says, we knew he was responsible for, but this is made more clear. The Secretary General is responsible for preparing, presenting the statement of accounts according to the international standards, to prepare a statement of accounts without significant errors. This is checked, and it's also up to the Secretary General to survey to monitor the financial information process of the IPU. So the Secretary General provides this information, and that is why, dear colleagues, that I have sent to the members of the Executive Committee that are members of the Finance Committee as well, a note asking if they agree that we ask the Secretary General to make us a report on the expenses for each project. We still have not received that. This is being prepared. It takes some time to come up with all these figures. So that is what I had to say for the moment. It seems everything is okay. Now, to the newcomers, we have decided on an increase of the quotations, not a voluntary one, but to the obligatory payments to the mandatory budget of an increase of 3%, but on a condition that this budget, or that these contributions be suspended until or withheld until 2020. That is the reason why the member parliaments have accepted this raise. They wanted to raise, but not every year. And this raise is a problem today because if we want to make expenses, we have to make savings elsewhere. And it's up to us to decide in the program to be presented. There are interesting points that we may give an answer to financially, and the Finance Committee will study all this and will inform you of our recommendations, and then you will decide about what to do. Mr. Chairman, is that what I had to say? I'm sorry I took a little time, but things are progressing, and the information I just received this morning shows that report from the auditors, Swiss federal auditors, people that they are professionals on finance control, and we trust them. Thank you. Thank you very much. We also have our internal auditors, Christer, for 2017.
And the only report I can give is that I have no report because I haven't got the figures from the Secretariat. It was supposed to be sent to me last week, but as I heard, it was only in French, and my French is not so good, so they were supposed to send it in English, but there were bad translation. So the Secretariat took it back again, and hopefully I got it today or tomorrow. But I haven't seen it. The only thing I can say that I have heard that it looks good, but I'm not sure until I see it.
Thank you. This is about the results 2017. About the voluntary funding, I don't know if Robert wished to say also something about it. Voluntary funding.
As far as the voluntary financing is concerned, they have a minimum of 2,800,000 Swiss francs. That is, according to the forecast. Well, these voluntary contributions are announced, but then the donors, they have their conditions 1 year, 2 years, so it was slightly below the figure that was first announced. But And the Secretary General informs of the voluntary contributions. He always says that this is a commitment of voluntary contributions to be made in 1 year or 2 years, so it's not always a precise figure. For the auditors, 2 million, 2.8 million in 2017. And this is according to the normal functioning. One thing that will be explored is the foundation. It's not a political innovation, but something like that. It's an innovation that was created with a small budget. I think it's 22,000 francs, Swiss francs, that were given to this foundation. And it's a foundation that was created one day to... I cannot remember why it was created, but it was for a specific financing of something very, very specific. We paid 25,000, 30,000francs, but there are still 20,000 francs there. It's not being used. Maybe we can go back to that and ask for it to be used. But that's not up to the federal auditor. The third auditor that is in charge of this. Well, an auditor for 20,000 francs, that will be not much. Just paying the auditor, we'll spend the 20,000 francs probably. But that's something we can ask the Secretary General about. I want in the Finance Committee to ask the Secretary General about these 20,000 francs. What are they going to do about that? Well, it's not a huge sum, so there is nothing suspicious there, I'm sure. I just wanted to know about those 20,000 francs.
Thank you. Christian?
To start with, you can see under point one that CEDA is paying about 40% of the voluntary funding. And they started to do that, and I want to give this as an explanation. They started to do that in 2006. Then they paid 60,000. Mm-hmm. In 2010, mm-hmm. It was 600,000, and today it's 1.3 million. I hope that we can make this even bigger, and I hope that you can do the same with your authorities. Because what we did was to go to them and see how they use the money. And instead of sending them to UN or whatever, we asked them to send them directly to IPU. I hope that we can do it and even more for the next 3 years. Because this time we have only prolonged it for 1 year. And the reason is that we want to have the system more transparent in IPU. How the money is used, and CEDA is paying for that work right now, and we hope it will be ended in May or June this year. After that, there will be a new discussion, and this bust is about a strategy, and I will come back to that when we discuss the amendments to the new statutes, because this is very, very crucial.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I want to pick up on those comments that Christer's made. Under tab 9.2, where we've all got 9.1, 9.2, the blue tab, I believe, are the listing of the institutional and program funding partnerships. I guess this is called voluntary funding. I guess what they mean is programmatic monies and program funding.
Sweden is only giving money to the strategy, not programs. So
I see. Sand corrected. Canada is giving 1.5 million Swiss francs this year and next year, till the end of this year, for gender partnership programs. That program is subject to renewal, but it won't be renewed without further without further transparency. I have asked repeatedly for updates. We're working on it. We're making our way forward. But I wanted to ask Obaya something, if I could, about this list. And it was something we raised, Margaret, myself. Peggy was there. You were there, Duarte, about in Geneva just several weeks ago or maybe a month ago. This list doesn't appear to be complete. It doesn't have, for example, the United Arab Emirates' first funding for the high-level advisory group on anti-terrorism, which could be as high as $2 million. I don't know what that is in Swiss francs. It's not on this list. I'm not sure why, Robert. But, Robert, also, I'm wondering from a transparency perspective and also from a just a comprehensive perspective, one of the ideas I'd raised in Geneva, I'm not sure how the executive group here feels about it, when you present the IPU and present its books, and when the IPU continues to grow in terms of looking for financial support from other sources, whether it's the member states or whether it's foundations or other sources of monies, which is where I really think the IPU should be focusing. So I'd like to say we can fight over that small pie or we can actually grow a much bigger pie. But one of the things, Robert, that we don't have from the IPU is something I'd raise with the Secretary General, that is, how much money is the IPU leveraging every year in each and every one of our respective states? Right? So we make a contribution. We all make contributions to the IPU, into the family. But yet back at home in France and Canada and every other state spends hundreds of thousands of Swiss francs. And nowhere is that captured so that the full financial impact is made available to us. And the reason this is important is because donors are increasingly going to be looking to our ability as an organization to leverage money. Leverage. Every dollar, every Swiss franc we give you will leverage three more. Prove it. And it probably already is. 15 or 16 million Swiss francs, Sir Robert, I think, grosso modo, the budget for the IPU headquarters. But that's not the full budget of the IPU. I don't know what the UK spends internally, but it's got to be 100,000 Swiss francs or more a year. Canada spends 200,000-300,000 Canadian dollars, maybe 150,000 Swiss francs a year internally on IPU matters. Hosting the young parliamentarians, the Portuguese parliament hosting us here. I think our House of Commons spent well over 1.5 million Canadian dollars for the young parliamentarians event. We're not capturing that anywhere. And it would be very helpful for us to have a full accounting. About, I don't know if something we can take back to the team to say, I think it would be helpful for us in our own domestic context as well. Just a suggestion for our consideration.
Robert, and then
c'est très intéressant ce que dit David.
It's very interesting what David is saying, but it is difficult for the IPU to have a state of play of the expenses in all countries, because if you're organizing a meeting under the IPU, but at local or regional or even national level, it is very difficult to know who spent what and for what reason. Now, in the cases where the IPU is the actual organizer, like the youth committee meetings, for instance, we know that in Moscow, the main assemblies of the IPU are very expensive, 5 to 6 million Swiss francs that the Russians have paid. But that is difficult because these expenses are sometimes made to enhance somewhat the country. In Quebec, for instance, they wanted to have this extraordinary conference where everyone appreciated the involvement of Quebec after previous attempts to organize, so they spent a lot. Now, can the IPU take account of all this? But not only the countries know what they have spent. The IPU has no control over that. The IPU only knows about the expenditures that it has made itself and that there is a reimbursement afterwards. So 50,000 francs, I suppose, for the, for instance, for travel costs. But we can ask IPU to come up with this state of play. But then all countries will have to inform the IPU about these events that they have carried out and the expenses they have had. But it's difficult, but it can be asked. Yes, it can be asked. And it will be interesting to see how much this costs in total. But if we want to go even further, we can have a state of play of our expenses. We have to follow the IPU's work to come here to Leiden. We have to pay for our travel expenses and hotel, all that. That is not direct IPU expenses, but it's some work that concerns IPU. So it is complicated for IPU to take account of all this alone. Now, where I do agree most with you is about this voluntary contribution and the use of these voluntary contributions, and there we need total transparency. Thank you.
Is the internal auditor for this year, not 2017, but for 2018, but he went to Geneva to contact the IPU employees about and try to know the figures of about execution of the budget of this of the current year. So, if you wish to say something.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to say that I'm internal audit only for 2018. I have been the first meeting in Geneva with Mrs. Andri and Mr. Ed Cooper, and that meeting in Geneva, which took place in positive atmosphere and cooperation with them. But I want to share with you some impressions that I have been in that meeting. First of all, I saw IPU is a rigid functional organization, extremely rigid function. For example, in March and in October, when we have the assembly, all the employees of the IPU go to the assembly, including the four employees of New York. So what that means? That means that, for example, IPU must contract a person to do the telephone job in the Geneva, or IPU must to contract the person to, for example, make all the list of the participants in the assembly. So I think that IPU members of employees don't have extremely rigid. They don't have a functional to do other things. That's very important, in my opinion. Other examples. For example, you know that the cost of interpretation and the translators are very important for IPU. Until now, IPU gave it preference to contract all that kind of service in Geneva, without make any price consult market. So that is more strange when the assembly is outside of Geneva, with all the costs of that, because in that case, 40 interpreters and 20 translators going out from Geneva, to outside to do that job, that could be contracting in local where the assembly realize. So I have asked more information about that kind of service and that kind of practice, but I think that we must to look at these costs with careful, because the persons do that because usually do that, or it don't have a proactive task to do some difference, do some better. So, of course, that is only a small feelings that I have feel when following my first meeting. And, of course, in next meetings, maybe after they send me other additional information, we could have a more profound retract to what we are talking about.
Thank you, Virgilio. I don't know how it works in your parliament, but for instance, here, we need to invite, if you will spend the amount is too big, it's a public, an open contest, everyone can go, and if it's small amount, we need to invite 3 or 5 companies to give a budget, and we will try to contract the lower of the budget. IPU is not doing this. They contract directly. And that's why we think some rules needs to change. Because if you know, if you contract direct, I will contract someone that I have confidence, of course, that they will do a good job, but maybe a friend, and the costs may be higher than if I do other way, because we don't have possibility to different companies to give a budget to the same job that we are contracting. For us here inside our parliament, it's a law. If you buy water or coffee or something, we need air tickets. If we go somewhere, if we go to Geneva, we'll ask to 3 different agencies to give the prices of the airplanes, and we will contract the best one. We will not contract directly. So that's one thing that I don't understand why IPU is not doing same way. But okay, it's different. Christer, please.
I think the reason is quite open, because we are following the EU rules when it comes to our parliaments. So if you are above a certain amount, there is a law going into the competitions, and you have to do it. In my mind, when I was in the ExCom, there was a competition when it comes to writing the contract. So I hope that it works in the same way today, that IPU goes to different company and asks them of the price, because that's the way it should be. And I know that it had been in that way, so I hope it works. But still, it's a job for the ExCom to ask them, how is this service functioning? Is it the best? And cheapest is not always the best, but is it the best for that price? That's what you need to know. Thank you.
David, please.
Well, Mr. Chairman, do we know what the rules are? I don't know each of our countries, the European Union, rules under NAFTA, other organizations. I was reviewing a document for the Green Growth Institute in Korea the other day, and a document prepared by a contractor who had won the bid through a request for proposals. So, Mr. Chairman, what would be helpful to know is, what are we doing now? Are there no standards whatsoever at the IPU? Are there no standing offers? Are there no requests for proposals? If the contracts were below 25,000 Swiss francs, are they not subject to bidding? What are the rules? If there are no rules, then that's quite difficult to justify. Perhaps we could write a letter on behalf of this group asking the Secretary General to give us in writing the financial rules which exist. If there are none, then he should say so. And we should perhaps... We will create some, exactly. Robert a complètement raison. We can take a look at that point and say, well, come on, you are a 15 million Swiss franc organization. Actually, I think it's closer to 40 million when you look at the leverage monies. But we can't sell that back at home. You're asking us to pay increased contributions, and our people are saying, well, where's the money going and how's it being spent and is it most efficient? So perhaps we could write a letter asking the Secretary General to give us an explanation as to how this contracting actually takes place. That would be a good place to start. And then at the next executive committee, of the entire IPU. There are a number of us here who are members of that. We can take it forward and say we've written a letter, and the 12 plus is expecting an answer.
Do you agree?
Oui, non,
because Robert is a member of ESCOM.
Yes, on peut faire ça.
Yes, we can do that. We can ask first the Finance Committee for explanations on the functioning of these awarding of contracts. How does this work, the granting of contracts concerning interpretation and concerning travel expenses? So those major expenditures, because that's what really weighs on the budget. The figures that in the budget that have been audited by the federal auditors, for instance, staff. Christian was said we don't have figures. Well, I have a few figures here. In 2017, 7,900,000 Swiss francs were spent on permanent staff. 2016, it was 8,342,000. So we spent 411,000 francs less, Swiss francs. Now, why? The auditors explained that someone that was rather expensive, a P5 in the UN classification, that was not replaced. So that was a decrease in the expenditure. So we saved 400,000 Swiss francs. Does this have an influence on the work of IPU? I don't know. It's possible. But There are also the temps, temporary workers, and of course the interpreters. It was not just the interpreters, but all temporary workers. 2,617,000, and 2,782,000 the previous year in 2016. So that's savings of 6.6%, meaning 174,000 francs less. So there are very differences from one year to the other that are relevant. And the pensions bank also allowed for certain savings. But also there was some revenues of investments that also contributed to this pension fund. Now, travel expenses, this may be of interest to the Secretary General. For travel expenses in 2016, it was 1,013,000 Swiss francs. 1,013,000 Swiss francs. And in 2017, 1,053,000 Swiss francs, so just a slight increase, about 3.7% in travel expenses. That was for 2017. Now, other charges for contracts and such, it was more or less the same. Business or other charges. And the question we ask, because in these AOBs, we spent in 2016 188,000, and in 2016 more than 378,000. This was a significant increase, over 50% in these different expenditures. We don't know what this means exactly, but it's 50% more than in 2016. And this, of course, requires an explanation. It was almost 200,000 Swiss francs more. Now, these 200,000 francs were used in what? And we have to ask the question, and I'm sure they will give us an answer. So I just wanted to inform you of these more up-to-date figures. And you will have them in English as well, of course. The figures will be the same, of course. The figures don't change from one language to the other.
Well, thank you very much. It's very important, this information. We don't have it already. Christer, and then David.
Yes, I just want to comment one more thing. And it's about when we have our meetings, big meetings outside of Geneva. We say that it's a cost. Yes, it is, but not for IPU. The decision is, at least it has always been that before, that if a country wants to organize a meeting like that, they are supposed to pay all extra costs, everything that costs more than if it is in Geneva. So if we send out 100 people, then it's a cost for the host country. It's not for IPU. It's not a defense of the system. I just want to clarify where the cost will come in the end.
Yes, it's true, but is the country that hosts it has not the freedom to contract the service in their own country and to save money. If we do a meeting in Canada, do we have good interpreters there? Canada, why Canada will pay for interpreters who came from Geneva? Why? I think that someone liked this business. David, it's your turn.
Mr. Chair, not to belabor this, but and I know nothing about Swiss foundation law, but there are generally accepted accounting principles all over the world. So if you work for PricewaterhouseCoopers in one of their massive offices in Paris, or if you work for Accenture in Rio de Janeiro, there are generally accepted accounting principles everywhere that transcend all of our countries. But what I don't know exists or doesn't exist in Switzerland is what are the rules for the around procurement of goods and services, how you buy those. In a North American context, the rules with government money contributions are very strict. So they require three bidders, a request for proposal, request for qualifications, et cetera, et cetera. We don't want to make this too onerous for the IPU, but it would be nice to know, are they in conformity with Swiss law? Are they in conformity with the practice of other organizations? For example, you can't do business again with the Green Growth Institute in Korea. You cannot do business unless you respond to a request for proposals and you're bidding. And as a panel that actually decides who gets the contract based on objective criteria. Similarly for airfare. In Canada, we go to the market every year and we say, okay, if you'd like to bid on all of this travel for all members of Parliament and senators, here is the deadline by which you must propose and submit your bid. And Air Canada must, for example, knock off 25 or 35%. It must offer flight passes. It must offer all kinds of concessions if it wants this enormous contract, failing which they don't get the contract. So I don't know what the rules are under Swiss law, but it would be very easy to find out by writing one letter asking it for it to be laid out for us.
I will give you, Robert, maybe Chris and Virgilio may prepare this kind of letter, because it's the internal auditor 2017 and 2018. John, they can change emails and so on, and to prepare a letter about this kind of questions, if you agree. Robert, do you want to...
Just one word. Les auditeurs fédéraux...
The federal auditors explained to us in their report that the accountancy of IPU follows the international rules of international public service. IPSAS 25 now, then it will be IPSAS 40. And IPU is observing these rules, these standards. Now, what I do not know is if these standards also comprise the tenders for travel expenses and all that. I don't know. So if the federal auditors tell us that the IPSA, well, if they say that IPSA comprises those expenses, so much for the better. And then they will explain to us what what expenditures are these and all that. But it's a letter we have to ask them to have. I'm not going to take this much further, but Just two things. Wouldn't it be good to ask the Secretary General to come to our meeting in Geneva and to, of course, we will give us our support, but to ask him to explain to us in 10 minutes what is the current practice? Well, 10 minutes will not suffice. On the other hand, and I know about what happens in Geneva, and as far as the interpreters are concerned, well, in Geneva we have an impressive number of headquarters of international organizations. We have standard tariffs. They are agreed by the local trade unions. I was a translator. I'm not an I've never been an interpreter, but I've been a translator before, and all these tariffs were defined by trade union agreements. But in the next spring, we have our meeting in Buenos Aires. I wonder. I have nothing against that Argentina recruits locally the interpreters. Of course, it will have to be quality interpreters, but no problem that they are engaged locally.
I agree on that. So we may try to prepare the letter. We'll send the letter before very soon. We will wait for an answer. And if you don't like the answer, we will invite the Secretary General to attend our meeting and to explain. If the answer is very clear, we don't need to invite the Secretary General. Do you agree? So we'll do it. Robert?
On aura peut-être la réponse.
Maybe we'll have the answer to our questions. Well, we already asked from explanations from the Finance Committee, so maybe an answer is already available, or will be available at the time.
If you have better. Christian and Virgil will prepare it, and we will send the letter to the Executive Committee and Secretary General asking for these kind of questions. Before we go to the point 9.3, the amendments, we may do the coffee break, 10 minutes, because I think that it will be a huge discussion, and so we have toilets nearby the, our hall, and we will go also to the plenary hall to take a picture, a group picture, and they are waiting for us now. It was 11, it was the time prepared to have to the plenary hall right now to take the group picture. Yes. So, 5 minutes break before the picture. Okay.
Thank you.